Today, sharing the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chav Gimel. We begin about 10 lines down at the two dots. We're learning today Le'ilish Nishlas Ephraim Kleinworm, Ephraim Ben Binyamin Zev, and David Rosenberg. I don't have his Hebrew name. All the Nishamas we learn for should have an Aliyah. Again, we begin about 10 lines down at the two dots, quoting the Mishnah Chav Gimel Lomad Aleph. Keitz Harayu Masiyin Masuos. So how did they go and light the torches on the mountain? Mevin klonsos v'chule. They brought various types of wood and other things, and they lit these torches, and then they waved them up and down, back and forth, to alert the people at the next mountain that they, in fact, had declared Rosh Chodesh to be on a certain day. Nigmar says, Amar Yehuda, there are different types of arozim, different types of wood. So arba mine arozim hein. Rav Yehuda tells us that there are four types of arozim, one that's known as erez, another that's known as kasrom, another that's known as eitz shemen, and another that's known as brosh. These are translated different ways by different commentators. We'll just call them by their Hebrew name. In any event, the Gemara is now going to ask us, what are each of them? Kasrom, what is that? So Amar Rav, Adra. Rav tells us that that's something that's known as the Adra tree. Rashi points out that we learned this in Masechta Beitza, that this was known as Yita Bohen Eder. This Eder tree is the Adra. Alternatively, in Devei Rabbi Shela, in the Beis Medrash of Shela, Amri, they said that this Kasrum was the Mavliga tree. The Amri Law, others say there was Zu Gulmish, it was the Gulmish tree. So we have different opinions what this Kasrum is. Upliga the Rabba Bar Rav Huna, and they disagree with Rabba Bar Rav Huna. What did Rabba Bar Rav Huna say? He said from the Beis Medrash of Rav, Asara mine arozim hay. Rabbi Yehuda said that there are only four types of arozim. In fact, in the Beis Medrash of Rav, they learned that there are 10 types of cedar trees, arozim. What are those 10 types? So we have a pasuk that's going to list 7 of them. Shenemar, this pasuk, which can be found in Yeshaya, tells us, Etain Bamidbar Erez, that's number 1. Shita, that's number 2. Bahadas is number 3. The Eitz Shemen is number 4. And then it's Osim Ba'arova, I will put into the desert Berosh, that's number 5. Tidhar is number 6. Usa Ashur, that's number 7. And I'll put them Yachdav all together. So this Pasuk in Yeshaya lists 7 types of Arozim. Now first, before we go to the other 3 that are the 10 for total, so the Gemara tells us what these are. What is Erez? Here we define what the Erez is. That's called Arza. That is normally known as cedar wood. That's the typical cedar wood. Shita is known as Turnisa. Turnisa, Rashi translates as a pine tree. Hadas, that's the Asa. That's the myrtle. That's also known as a type of Erez. Eitz Shemen, that's known as a Farsima. That's the balsam type of a tree. So these 4 are the first 4 that he mentions. Then it says Osim Barava. It lists that I would put into the desert 3 other types of trees. The first one it tells us is Barosh. That's something known as Barasa. Tidar is something known as Shaga. And Te'ashur is something known as Sherivna. Again, in the article, they give various translations. So there's Barosh, they translate as boxwood. And the Tidar is a fir tree. And Te'ashur is, again, no translation specifically over here. It is a certain type of tree known as Sherivna. Okay, those are 7. Whereas, Hani Shivilhu. You tell me that there were 10, and you only listed 7 from the Pasuk in Yeshaya. Shemar says, Kiyosu of Dimi, when Dimi came from Yisrael, Omer, he said the following additional 3 types of Erez, or Arozim trees, were noted. Hosifu Aleim, they added 3 names, Alonim, a certain type of tree known as the Alonim tree, the Almonim tree, and the Almugin tree. What are these? So Alonim, the Gemara tells us, is a tree known as the Botmi. It's often translated as the elm tree. Rashi calls it Ulmi. It's the elm tree. That's the first one. The next one that we bring down is the Almonim. That's a Baluti. This is normally translated as an oak tree. And finally, the last one is Almugin, which is translated as Kosisa. Now, we normally translate Almugin as a type of coral. We'll discuss coral a little bit more later in today's shir, but this is the total listing, according to Rav Dimi, of the 10, the extra 3 plus the 7 from the Pasuk in Yeshaya. Alternatively, the Gemara says, Ika Diamre, that the other 3 are Aronim, Armonim, and Almugin. What are these? So Aronim, this is something known as Ore, it's translated as a laurel tree. Again, Rashi gives all of these as foreign language words. Armonim is something translated as Dulmi, this is normally translated as a chestnut tree. And Almugin, as we said, is Kosisa, is coral. Now, While we were on this discussion of coral, the Gemara is now going to tell us how they would obtain coral from the sea. Coral grows at the bottom of relatively shallow waters, but how would they go and harvest the coral? So the Gemara provides us with a very interesting historical note about how they would go and harvest the coral. So based upon the pasuk in Yeshaya, which we discussed previously in regards to that there would be a stream that would eventually become a huge flowing river coming out of the third base of Migdash, Meher B'Yameinu, should be rebuilt. So it says, V'tzi Adir. Tzi Adir is a very, very big ship. Lo Yavrenu, even this very, very big ship, Rashi translated it as something, a dromenot, maybe it's something like a dreadnought type of a ship, a very large ship. This river will be flowing out so strong that even a very, very large ship won't be able to withstand this huge flowing water. So even a Tzi Adir, Lo Yavrenu. So what is it, Siadir? Omar Rav, Zuburni Gedola. This is a very, very big ship. And what was its purpose? Hechi Avdu. What was the purpose of such a ship? So Maisi, Shis Alfi Gavre, they would go and get 6,000 people, and they would hire them, Betrei Sayachi Shata, for a 12-month period of time. Alternatively, Amrile, they would hire Tracer Alfi Gavri, 12,000 people, Bishisa Yachishata, for a 6-month period of time, in order to go and harvest the coral. And how would they do this? They would take this big burni, this big ship, this tsiadir, Vitanele Chola. They would go and put Chola, Rashi says a sand, Chol. They would put sand inside the ship, Adishachta, until it was weighted down, and it would go lower in the water. It didn't sink. Rashi explains that Shuleo Shochdin Bekarkoyes Hayam, that the bottom of the boat would go down lower in the water because of all the sand that you're putting in, so the weight of the boat would lower the boat in the water. And the Udna nearest the Malam in Amayim, but the sides of the boat still were above the water because the Mokum Sha'amugim Gedalim, in the place where the coral grew in the water, Bayam, Ein Hayam Omo Kokach. So they would lower the ship by weighting it down, and it would rest on the bottom of the seabed, which is where the coral was, but it was relatively not too deep. It was relatively shallow water, and as a result, the sides of the boat were above the water level, but the bottom of the boat was touching the bottom of the seabed. They would then go and send the Noachis Bar Amuroi. They would send down these divers. Bar Amuroi, Rashi says, are Melumed Loshut Benoros, people that were expert in diving down to the bottom of these relatively shallow waterbeds. And what they would do there is the kota, they would tie atune de chitna, they would tie these ropes that were made out of flax, bikasisa, to this coral. Kasisa, we said, was the word for the coral. And then these men that they had hired, these 6,000 men for 12 months, or the 12,000 men for 6 months, they would then unload the salt from the ship so it would lighten its load and it would rise. The kotel hu besvinasa, they would tie first the other end of the rope that they tied to the coral to the boat, and then they would vinotle chala, they would go and take the salt out of the boat, vishadu livrai, and throw it overboard, and or back into the land. And as a result, the boat would rise. The kama de medalia, and as the boat rose, okra umasaya, it would go and rip out the coral. The pressure of rising would tug at the coral, which is tied by the rope to the boat and to the coral, and it would go and rip it out. It would be okarit, umasya, okra umasya. It would rip it out and bring it up. And this is how they harvested the coral. This coral was very, very expensive. Umachlif, they would be able to go and exchange this coral, al-chad, train bekasla. The silver they would exchange it for is worth twice as much as the coral. So let's say they had a pound of coral, they can get 2 pounds of silver for it. That's how valuable the coral was. Now, while we're on the subject of coral, so we're going to learn about various ports where they would do these underwater activities, either harvesting coral or they would harvest pearls. So Tlos Parvosa Havyon, there were 3 such ports that were used for harvesting in the ground. 2 of them were for coral, and 1 was for pearls. Now, the 2 that were coral, Tarte Be Armoy, they were in Aramean countries. Others suggest that Armoy is Lashon of Rome, and some of the Mefarshim bring down this was Sicily. In any event, that's where 2 of them were. The Chada and the one for the pearls was in Persia, Devei Parsoi. Devei Armoy, the 2 that were Aramean or Roman, Maskun Kosisa, they were used, as I said, to harvest coral. And the Bay Parsoi, the one that was in Persia, Maskon, they would go and harvest Maginisa. They would go and get pearls from the bottom over there in these shallow waters. And it was known as Umakaraya, was called Parvasa, the port of the Mashmehig, the port of the Melucha, Rashi says. The Mashmehig, Rashi tells us, is Nomol Shel Melucha, the port of the kings. The Mefarshim bring down that the purpose of telling us this is to teach us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he was Moseh Nebuch Klai Yisrael into the hands of the Goyim, he wanted to be Moseh them into the hands of important Goyim. So it's telling us over here that the Persians and the Romans or the Arameans, so they were Chosh of the nations that had these great ports that they would harvest the coral and the pearls. So when Klai Yisrael's Nebuch handed over to them, we weren't just handed over to any Uma of a Lashon, we're handed over to a Chosh of a enemy. Mark continues and says, Amar Yochanan. Yochanan tells us, Kol Shita Vishita, every one of these types of errors known as Shita, which is usually translated, as we said, as a pine tree, Rashi brings down, Shenotu Nochum Yushalayim, every one of these pine trees that the Nochum took from Yushalayim, Asad HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lachzirun La. In the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make them go and pay it back. Now, why does it only tell us here about the pine trees? Why not the other types of cedar trees? So one of the answers it's brought down is because this was the main type of tree that was used in Eretz Yisrael for the building, and therefore that's the critical one, but in fact all of the other trees would be paid back as well. So Asad HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lachzirun La. Ultimately, for every one of these pine trees that the Goyim took from Eretz Yisrael, they would be having to give it back to us. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Etain Bamidbar Eretz Shita. It doesn't say that I will plant, it says attain by Midbar Eretz Shita, which means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will get it back. The Midbar that they're referring to is El Yerushalayim. So these trees that were taken from Yerushalayim will eventually be returned to us by the oppressing nations that oppressed us. Shenemar Tzion Midbar Ha'isav Gomer. Tzion is referred to as a Midbar. Nebuch, it was in ruins, but it will be rebuilt. B'nei Yameinu, and the Goyim will return to us all the things that they plundered from Yerushalayim. The Amar of Yochanan, another thing of Yochanan said was, Kol Alomei Torah, Vino Malamda, if a person goes and learns Torah, but doesn't teach it to other people, he's Dome Lahados Bamidbar. He's compared to a myrtle tree, which is a beautiful reyach, however, it's in the Midbar, where nobody has an opportunity to smell it. So therefore, it's almost like it's a waste of time to have such a beautiful smelling item in a place where nobody can smell it. So too, if a person learns Torah, but he doesn't teach it to other people, it's a shame, so to say, that he has all this beautiful smell, all this beautiful Torah, but he doesn't teach it to other people, and nobody can smell it. Alternatively, Iker D'Amrei, this is what Rav Yochanan meant. He says, Kol Alomei Torah, U'melamda b'makum she'en tamidei chachamim. If somebody learns Torah, especially in a place where there aren't a lot of other tamidei chachamim for the people to learn from, so this person is dome lahadus b'midbar. He is comparable to this hadus tree in the midbar, which, by the way, is the end of the pasuk that we just worked down. Attained by midbar eretz shita. We darshan that in the first part of the drasha here, but the end word over there is the hadus. That's why Rav Yochanan made statements here about the hadus as well. So in this Ika the Amre version of what Rav Yochanan said, he's telling us that if a Talmud Chacham learns in a place where there aren't other Talmidei Chachamim teaching the people, so this is very, very special. Dome lahadas b'midbar. He's like a hadas in the midbar. The chaviv, here we say that this is a very positive thing because there is nothing else that smells nice there. So when everybody comes, they're going to go and smell this beautiful hadas in the midbar. So it's very, very, very special because there is nothing else there to smell. So too, if the Talmud Chacham teaches in a place where there aren't other Talmidei Chachamim, there's very little Torah being learned, so that Torah that he learns there is even more special. Another thing that Rav Yochanan said, the Amar Rav Yochanan, Oy lohem liyov deko chavim she'en lohem takana. The goyim who oppress the Jewish people are not going to have a takana. They're going to be in a lot of trouble. Woe to them. Shenemar. This is based upon the pasuk that we have in Yeshaya as well. A lot of the psukim from Yeshaya are, especially the end of Yeshaya, are the nechama psukim, the shev de nechemta that we read after the 3 weeks, after Tisha B'Av. They come from Yeshaya. So the end part of Yeshaya, the last half of Yeshaya, is very, very much of a comfort for Klai Yisrael for the future. So this pasuk comes from there as well, and it says that the Goyim who oppress Klai Yisrael, they're going to have to pay restitution. So it says, Shenemar, Tachas and Achoshes, all the copper that they stole from the Jewish people, Avizal, they're going to have to replace it with gold. Betachas and Barzel, and all the iron that they took from Klai Yisrael, Avikesef, they're going to have to replace that with silver. Betachas and Eitzim, and with all the wood that they took from us, Nechoshes, they're going to have to bring us copper. Betachas u'avonim, and the stones that they quarried from us and stole from us, they're going to have to bring us back barzo. They're going to bring us back iron. In other words, they're going to have to do restitution for all the things that they stole from us. Now, It says that this is all for the material items, but it doesn't say that they can make a restitution for Nebuch, the Jewish people that they killed. Tachas Rabbi Akiva v'chaveirav. Rabbi Akiva is the classical example, the example par excellence of Nebuch, the Goyim oppressing and killing the Jewish people. He's one of the Asar Ruge Malchus. So it doesn't say that they can replace these people. They were able to place the physical items that they stole, but the people Nebuch that they killed and tortured and murdered, Tachas Rabbi Akiva v'chaveirav, my mivin, how can they possibly replace that? And about them, the pasuk says, "Vinikesi, I will forgive them for certain things. However, domom lo nikesi, but I will not be able to forgive the blood of Klal Yisrael that they killed, the Rabbi Akiva v'chaveirav. That there'll be no restitution, and that woe is to them. Oy lehem liovdi kochavim. That's what Rabbi Yochanan said, that there is no takana for that. Then we quote the Mishnah again. It says, "Meyayinu meyasiyim asuos v'chulei," which mountains they actually use to go and light on the first mountain, and then they would go from Harazesim to the second mountain, to the third mountain, etc., until they reached the edge of Eretz Yisrael, and then they would be able to go and wave, so the Golos would be able to see that the Rosh Chodesh had been declared. So it said, the last point was when we based Baltan, that was the last mountain, Tosus on Chof Gimel Omid Beis tells us that this was like the furthest most point in Eretz Yisrael, this was still within Eretz Yisrael, and they would light it up there, and then they would see it in the Gola. So the Gemara says, my Beis Baltin, what is this place known as Beis Baltin? So I'm a Rav. Rav tells us when we turn to Chof Gimel Omid Beis, this is a place known as Bira. And again, Tosus over here, the top Tosus says, Mashma Shumei Eretz Yisrael. This is literally the most distant part of Eretz Yisrael, right before you have Bava. So this is known as, Beis Baltin was known as Bira. And what does it mean, the Gola, that the entire Gola was lit up? So obviously it can't mean the entire Golos was lit up. So Amar Rabbi Yosef, Zu Pumpadisa. It's a reference to Pumpadisa, which was nearby. And when Pumpadisa was lit up, so that notified the rest of the Gola that Rosh Chodesh had been declared. Now, what does it say in the Mishnah? It said that it was lit up like Kimeduras Eish. So what does it mean, my Kimeduras Eish? So the Gemara says, Tana, Kol Echad V'Echad, No Telavu Kabiyado. Everybody in Pumpadisa would go and go up to their rooftop and take a little torch with them. And they would go up to their rooftop and wave it. And this is what it means, is the entire Gola, meaning the entire Pumpadisa, was lit up like a Kimeduras Eish, like a big torch. Furthermore, Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, Rav Shimon Elazar Omer, Afchorim v'choyor v'geder v'chavrosel. There were additional mountains. The Mishnah only listed some mountains. These additional mountains were also used to light up Eretz Yisrael and to be able to notify the people in Golos that Rosh Chodesh had been declared. So we now have two reasons why these weren't mentioned in the Mishnah. Why weren't they mentioned in the Mishnah? Ikad Yamei, the first reason says, Beini uveini havukaimi, that the reasons why these weren't mentioned in the Mishnah was these were like mountains that were in between the mountains that were mentioned in the Mishnah, and it didn't list every single one. A Mishnah wasn't meant to be a comprehensive list of every mountain, it just gave us highlights, but there were other mountains in between. Alternatively, Ika Diamre, Lahach Gisa, Eretz Yisrael, Havu Kaimi. No, that this was going on a different route out of Eretz Yisrael. They had a route that maybe went on the eastern side and a route that went on the western side, or another route, so that different parts of the Bavel would be able to know. And therefore, this was just an alternative chain of mountains that was being used. And Mar Choshev, the High Gisa, in the Mishnah, they listed the listing of mountains that they listed. Well, Mar Choshev, here in the Braisa, the High Gisa, he lists a different set of mountains. But there were two different routes that the torches took, and both routes were important. And the Mishnah lists one route, and the Braisa lists the other route. Amar Yochanan, Yochanan tells us another din. Bein kol achas viachas shmona parsos. Between each of the mountains that are listed around Mishnah, there was a distance of 8 parsos. I mentioned many times, a parsos 4 mil, and those roughly a kilometer. So you're dealing here with roughly 8 times 4, 32 kilometers, because there were 5 mountains listed in the Mishnah. So in between the 5 mountains, there are 4 distances of 8 parsa. So there's roughly a distance over here of 32 kilometers for each one of the distances between the mountains. So if you have 4 times 32, 128 kilometers, that would be the distance from the first mountain, Har HaMishka, until the extreme point of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, Kama Havaluhu, how much is this altogether? Flossin Vitartin, it's 32 parsos altogether. That's roughly 128 kilometers. It's 128 mil. So he says, wait a second, Vo'id no tuvahavu. If you go from Harazesim until the extreme point of Eretz Yisrael, it's more than that. So how can you tell me it's only 32 parsa, only 128 kilometers approximately? It's more than that. So we give two terutzim. Amar Abaye, he says, istatume istatum lahu darche. It is that the normal roads that you would travel from one place to the other have become blocked. Dersiv lochein hinini soch es darkech basirim. And the end of that pasuk is also important. It says, v'godarti es gedera. I fenced it in. Unisiv osel lo simso. You won't find the paths. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want them following the paths of Avodah Zarah. So he said, okay, you're going that way to worship Avodah Zarah, so I'll block it off for you, and you can't go direct routes. So if you look at it from a straight mileage point of view, like a plane would fly, so then it would be 32 parsa. But they had to go and take much more winding routes, because in this situation, the path wasn't a straight path. And that's why, if you go and look at it, he says, because you're taking a winding path. But if you just look at it in the mileage, going straight by an airplane, so then that would be 32 parsa. Alternatively, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar Mihocha, he brings it from this pasuk that it says, Dersiv Nesiv Osai Iva, I caused your paths to be twisted. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu twisted the paths, again, for the same reason that we just said, and this is a pasuk in Eicha, and therefore, as you look at it from a pure mileage point of view, it's 32 parsels. But if you look at it from a travel point of view, it's actually much more. Okay, now we go to the next Mishnah. Once the witnesses came to Yerushalayim, so they would go to this large courtyard. It was called Beis Yazik. In the Gemara, we'll discuss, was that its right name, Yazik, or was it instead called Yozek? We'll discuss this in the Gemara in a moment. But in any event, Ulsham Kol Eidim Iskansim, and that's where all the witnesses would come. Most say that the witnesses came there all the time, not only on Shabbos, but we're here going to discuss what they did there on Shabbos. In any event, Ubeis Din Bodkin Osham Sham, the Beis Din would check out the witnesses there, the first two that would come, the first kat of witnesses that would come, they would check first, and then they would check the other witnesses afterwards. We'll see what they did, if they needed them or not. Usuudos gedolos osim lahem. They would make a very big suda there. They'd make a big kiddush over there in order to encourage people to come. Bishush yu regilin lava. Oh, it's a big kiddush there. It's worth my while to travel on Shabbos or even on a weekday to go over there. Now, Barishona lo yuzazim yisham kol hayom. Now, here we're dealing with it being Shabbos, so you have tchum issues. So they'd come from outside the tchum, possibly, so they weren't allowed to go and move from there. They had to stay within that chotzer because that was their dalet amos. When you go outside your tchum, you're not allowed to go move more than dalet amos. So within that area was considered like dalet amos. It was an enclosed area, and therefore they would only be allowed to stay within that chotzer because otherwise they would be going outside their tchum. They'd be beyond their dalet amos. However, Hiskim Rav Gamliel Hazakin, since it's all a din derabbanon, tchum according to most opinions, so Rav Gamliel Hazakin said, nobody's going to want to come if they're stuck here. Okay, it's a great kiddush, but they're still going to be stuck here all day, and nobody's going to want to come. So he decreed, Shimahalchin Apayim Amal Choruch. He said, no, since these people came not intentionally out of breaking the din of tchum, so that's why the rabbi set up a knas under normal circumstances. If you go outside your tchum intentionally, you're stuck to just moving down the amos. But here, these people did a l'shei mitzvah, so we'll give them a new tchum of 2,000 amos, and therefore, people won't be discouraged from coming because of having to stay in the same place and not being able to move about. And he added, Rabbi Gamliel Hazakin, v'lo ela buvad, not only these people who came for the Dvar Mitzvah, but anybody who's doing a Dvar Mitzvah and has to leave their tchum. For example, Elo Af Chachoma Habol Yale, if you have a midwife known as a Chachoma that is coming to help with a childbirth, so she has to leave her tchum and go to another city, to another place to help a woman give birth. So then once Baruch Hashem, the baby's born, a healthy baby, so what's she going to do? She's going to stand in that dalet amos and not move? She's going to say, next time I'm not coming. So therefore, again, to encourage the Chachoma, the midwife, the doctor, from not having to worry about being stuck in the Dalet Amos area outside its chum, so they gave them permission as well to consider that new place as their new focal point and have 2,000 Amos from that new focal point. Likewise, if there's a fire and people are coming from outside the chum to help put out the fire, we don't want them to not come because, oh, I'm going to be stuck there. Likewise, if there's a marauding troop that's coming, so you're allowed to go and have a new tchum, even though you're outside your tchum, you should only have dalet amos. Likewise, minanar, if there's a river that's overflowing, you have to help put up sandbags and things like that, safe stuff. So and be allowed to go and again move beyond your Dalet Amos. And likewise, Umin HaMapolis, if Rechmon al Tzalan, a building collapsed and they need people to go through the rummage and hope that they can find people underneath, they're still alive. So you'd be allowed to go do this as well, to not have just Dalet Amos, but you'd have 2,000 Amos. And you're like the person living in that city, that you have 2,000 Amos. If that city is with the area that you're going to, so it's 2,000 Amos beyond the city. But you're like any city dweller, you have the same tlum as all those people. You're not kansed, there's no knas on a person who left this tlum that he only has Dalet Amos. They have that city, and then 2,000 Amos outside that city. So all of these people that didn't leave the tchum for a bad reason, they left the tchum for a mitzvah reason, for a good reason, so we don't cancel them. But if somebody intentionally leaves their tchum, so then we cancel them. Gemara starts and says, we said that they go to this big chotzer, which our Mishnah called it Beis Yazik. So Iboilu, they ask in the Beis Medrash, how do you pronounce this word? So our Mishnah pronounced it Yazik, but there's another way to pronounce it. Beis Yazik Tanan or Beis Yozik Tanan. What was the proper pronunciation of this courtyard that they put him into? So it depends what the word Yazik and Yozik means. So Beis Yazik Tanan, do we say, like our Mishnah had the gear, so that it's Yazik, the Lishna Ma'ayi. Yazik is a positive thing. The Chsiv, Vayazkeyu, Vayasalkeyu. This pasuk in Yeshaya tells us that they took the stones and made a fence around the vineyard. So that's a positive thing, that they did this to go and protect something. So Beis Yazik is a good thing, it protected the people, and therefore it was known as Beis Yazik. Or do we say, Odilma, Beis Yozik Tanan? Yozik is a Lashon of Tsar, Lishna de Tsarahu, the Chsiv, who Asur Bo Zikim, that they were confined, they were constrained by ropes and chains, and therefore Yozik is a Lashon of Tsar. So do we say that this is known as Beis Yozik because they were constrained to this courtyard originally? Or is it known as Beis Yazik? It's a protection, it's a good thing. So Mabaye Toshma, let's bring it right for the following in our Mishnah. It says, Sudos Gedolos, how you also lemsham. They made a big kiddush over there, Kadesh Yurigil Lovo, that you want to come. That sounds like it should be Yazik, which is a positive thing, rather than Yozik, which is a Tsar. So what says Lav Davka? Duma Tarte Havu of the Bahu. Yeah, it's a nice big kiddush, but then you're stuck there in that kiddush spot for the rest of the Shabbos. So therefore, it's not a positive thing. So even though they had a big kiddush over there, it still could be viewed in a negative sense, and Yozik would be the more proper term rather than Yazik. Or it doesn't come to a conclusion as to whether it's Yazik or Yozik. In fact, our Mishnah had the Lashon of Yazik. Next Mishnah. Cain said, "Both kinemas edim." Now the witnesses come. We said that they take the first two witnesses that came, and they go and interrogate them to see if they, in fact, both had the same information about seeing the new moon. They would interrogate them separately. We always interrogate the older person first. We give kavod to an older person, so the older of the two witnesses, he would be interrogated first, and then they would interrogate the younger of the two witnesses. Cain said, "Both kinemas edim." How do they actually do the bedika to check out the edim that they were telling us the truth? So Zug Shabar Rishon, the first Zug that came, the first group of witnesses that came, the first two, both Kinosom Rishon, as covered, they came first, so they were interrogated first. Machnisin as a Golish Vem, you take the older one of the two, again, as covered, and you put him in a room separately, you hear what he has to say, and then you see if the younger one agrees to what the older one had said. They're each interrogated separately. So they ask him, they ask the first one of the first group, the older one of the first group, and they ask him, Formulo, Emor Ketzad Ro'isu Eselavon, tell us what you saw. And they would ask him specific questions. Lifnei Achama Uliachar Achama, in the path that the sun travels, as seen in the sky of the earth travels around the sun, but we see it as if the sun is moving, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, so the moon also rises in the east and sets in the west. So did you see the moon lifnei achama or liachar achama? In relationship to the sun, was the moon in front of it or was it behind it? They similarly ask, Litzvona or Lidroma, was it to the north or to the south? Now, the Gemara will say this is exactly the same thing as was it in front of the sun or was it behind the sun? So the Gemara will ask, why are you asking the same question twice? And the Gemara will explain exactly what this means. It means something a little bit different. Then they would ask the witness, Kama Haya Gavoa, how high in the sky was it? Was it high in the horizon or lower in the horizon? Ulayin Hayinote, which way was the moon's crescent facing? The what we call the concavity. Was it facing towards the sun or was it facing away from the sun? The Kama Yerochav, how thick was the crescent? So we want to see that the two witnesses say the same thing. If one said, oh, it was very, very thick, in the Yerushalmi, they mentioned that they measured it in barley corns. So they would go and measure roughly estimate how big the crescent was. One said it was like 10 barley corns, very, very thick crescent. One said it was a very thin crescent. They know that they weren't seeing the same thing, and they couldn't combine these two witnesses. One was either not telling the truth, or they weren't really seeing the moon. So they would ask him how thick the crescent was. If they told him that, the Gemara will explain that this is talking about the sun in relationship to the concavity of the moon. So if it was that the concavity, that's the part that is indented, that you don't see because it's in the shadow. So if the part that is facing the sun, the concavity is the part that's open, is facing the sun, that's not telling the truth. It never occurs that way. The concavity, the crescent of the moon, is always facing away from the sun. The part that is open, so to say, is always facing away from the sun. So therefore, if they were telling us that the crescent was facing towards the sun, the open part is towards the sun, they know they weren't telling the truth. No, they interrogated the first witness. Whatever he said, they accepted and listened to. They would listen to the second one, as long as the first one didn't say something that was totally wrong, for example, like the concavity facing the wrong way. So they would ask the second witness, what did you see? And if the two aligned, and they said the same things that they knew were astronomically right, as well as they were jiving with each other, so then, if both of them said the same thing, so then they would declare a dusan kayemis. They would say that both witnesses were testifying accurately, and therefore they now could declare Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh. You had 100 other witnesses over there. A lot of people came. It was, like we said the other day, if you could see the moon clearly in the sky, nevertheless, everybody was encouraged to come. So what would they do with all the rest of the witnesses that were in this Beis Yazik? So Shar Kol HaZugos, all the other pairs of witnesses that came, they didn't want them to feel bad. Nobody even asked them a question. So Shaul and also Rashi draw them. They asked them, did you see the moon? Oh, how did you see the moon? It was in the sky. Oh, very good. So they would ask them some basic questions so they wouldn't feel bad that they had traveled and nobody listened to them. Lo Shei Yotzrichem, not because they needed them. They had the first pair of witnesses. Once they have a kosher pair of witnesses, you don't need any more. But they didn't want them to feel bad. Ela Kadesh Lo Yetzu B'Papwe Nachvesh B'Shul Shiyu Regil Lovo. They didn't want them to say, hey, we traveled all the way to Yerushalayim with Machal Shabbos, and nobody even asked us any questions. They didn't need us. Next time, I ain't coming. So we make them feel good. We give them a nice kiddush. We give them a nice place to stay. We enhance their tchum, that they have the tchum of the people of the city. And we ask them some questions so they feel important. And this way, Emir Tzashem, next time, maybe they'll be the first and only witnesses to come, but they'll be encouraged to come, and it won't cause them to not come. Okay. That's the mission. Now we start the Gemara. More questions, some of the questions that we asked in the Mishnah. It said, when we started up, we said, was it Lefnei HaChama or L'Achar HaChama, and was it Litzvon or L'Droma? Well, those two questions are the same questions. Hainu Lefnei HaChama means Hainu Litzvona. Was it in front of the sun, means it was to the north of the sun. And when we say Hainu L'Achar HaChama, was it after the sun, Hainu L'Droma, it means to the south of the sun. So why are you asking the same question twice? So what says, because it's not the same question twice. It really means, Amar Abaye, the question of north and south was in relation to the sky, which way it was. But here, when the second question, when they asked them, was it Lifnei HaChama or Le'achar HaChama, so that they were asking which way was the concavity of the moon facing. And that's what we said in the Mishnah afterwards, if they said that the concavity was facing towards the sun, the open part of the moon was facing towards the sun, that was impossible. It never occurred that way. And therefore, if that's what they said, lo amar klum. So they said nothing. How do we know this? Number of Yochanan. My desiv, he bases upon a pasuk. It says, Hamshel vo pacharimo, osa shalom bim romav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who everyone is afraid of. Everybody's in awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He makes shalom in the Shemayim. Right? He makes peace in Shemayim. Osa shalom bim romav. How does he do that? So he makes it that may olam, that the sun never sees the inside, so to say, of the crescent. It only sees the back of the crescent. It only sees from behind the concavity. And this is because the moon lost its light. Originally, at the time of creation, there were two stars in the sky. There was the sun and the moon. The moon was an independent lit star. And then, because the moon and the sun had a little sichsuch, the moon said, there can't be two leaders. You have to have one or the other. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, the sun will be in the day, you'll be at the night, but you'll only be a reflection of the sun's light. You'll no longer be a star yourself. Now you'll be a dead body, and you don't have your own light. You just reflect the light of the sun. So the moon was, so to say, mizbayish, that the sun should see it this way. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to maintain peace in the Shemayim, Oseh Shalom Bimromav, so that the moon and the sun, again, these are ideas that we can't begin to understand what it means that the moon and the sun shouldn't be embarrassed. means the malachim in charge of the moon and the sun. It means that if we're supposed to be concerned about embarrassment of an inanimate object, we should certainly be concerned about the embarrassment of a human being. So these are ideas that are very important ideas, and we can't understand them purely literally, but it says that this way the sun will never see the fact that the moon doesn't have light, and therefore the moon won't be embarrassed. So therefore, may olam lo rosa chama pegimasa shalavana. So that's one of the ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to say, makes shalom b'mromav. And likewise, lo pegimasa shal keshesh. A rainbow is also a bow, and the sun will never be facing, so to say, towards the inside of the rainbow. Pegimasa shalavana the chol shodaita. The reason, as I said, why the sun doesn't see the inner part of the concavity of the moon is because of the busha that would cause to the moon. And why doesn't the sun, Pigimasa Shal Keshes, why does the sun see the inside part of the rainbow, the Lo Lemru of the Achama, so that those people that Nebuch worship the sun, they're sun worshippers, and that they believe that the sun is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rachmano Litzlan. We turn to Chavdal Raman Aleph. It shouldn't look like the sun is using the rainbow as a bow and arrow, Gire Komishadja, and it's shooting anybody that doesn't believe that it is God. So therefore, in order not to have this totally mistaken idea from the people that were Ove Kochavim Mazalos, they were sun worshippers, they worshipped the heavenly bodies, and not HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it that it never looks like this is a bow and arrow, the rainbow is the bow and arrow of the sun. This is a good place to stop. With this we conclude today's share.